to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes. Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, on Bates, that's Jack. Sent them out. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 41. We've got a volatile overnight session, so we're down somewhat. Yesterday we finished, really finished on the highs of the days, even though we were down. Dow futures down 354, and NASDAQ futures down 61. Just for a review, we closed yesterday. Dow was down 1300. S&P came back to be only down 131. NASDAQ futures down 344, and they were down a lot lower than that. They were down, we were pushing 8%, and we finished down 5, so it was bad, but not as horrible. Lou, how are you?
Good morning, sir.
How are you? Where are you? Are you here?
I'm sheltering in place.
Oh, God. Well, it's probably not the bad idea, you know. I would say it's probably a good idea at this point, but I was just mentioning to Maddie on the way in, we've been getting a lot of stuff from the listeners. By the way, thank you very much, because obviously, I think, first of all, I think we got a boatload more listeners since this started, maybe because people are home. I think I've been getting emails from people, and Maddie has as well, that it's the one spot where people are trying to get news that, shall we say, is not... I'm not Bill Ackman shorting the market and going on TV and telling everybody that the world's ended for an hour and a half like I let him on yesterday. Without any studies, without anything he referenced, just his own position talking. And you know what? I'm kind of over that, Lou. I'm just over that a little bit. Question, I mean, it probably is happening in other places.
Let me just throw this out, and I'm going to lay this out, and it's been the cause of my trying to be reticent on social media and everything else. Our data on this thing are terrible.
Yes.
And I mean, for all the criticisms that are levied at government, et cetera, we really don't have a very good handle on what this thing is, how it spreads, how long it lasts in various places, what its mortality effects are, who, you know, all of this is still rolling out. There's a lot of contradictory data out there, although it seems now that we are starting to get a handle on not just some potential vaccine possibilities, but also treatment. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed on that. But bottom line is that a lot of the data that the president and his advisors are working off of are not reliable. And so I laughed this morning when I saw somebody tweet out, you know, for the first time China reports no new cases, and I'm going, oh, come on. You believe that? And you believe any data coming out of the Chinese Communist Party?
You know what? I almost do, and I'll tell you why. I think they locked up a whole area of the country. Everybody got it. A boatload of people died. They didn't care much whether you survived or you died. And now you're either recovered or dead.
I don't think they have. Well, first of all, even if that were true, I would say that virtually none of the data coming out of China are reliable.
I'm with you on that. I didn't disagree with you. I just said I think that was their approach to the problem.
Oh, it was. I mean, it was their approach to the problem. But I don't think they've got any better handle on how many people have it or are carrying it or are asymptomatic than we do.
Funny you should mention that, Lou, because I was just going to mention. See, I love it when you lead into me like that, and I've already got you trapped, kind of thing.
Ha ha.
Actually, not trapped, but as you know, the listeners send in a whole bunch of great stuff. And I don't know who the hell sent me this one. Actually, I think this might have been Frank. He's a contributor, not a listener. But there's an article here by Helen Branswell. And what she's doing, evidently some German study just came out, must have been like yesterday. This is what was mentioned to Maddie on the way in. I'm not going to be a Bill Ackman and criticize. But I think that when you start to get what appears to be pretty good research, you have to sort of adjust what you're doing. Because otherwise, by the way, I was reading also about the guy that Trump's got running the show. I don't know where I've read a more impressive biography than that guy.
Who is this, Fauci?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
I got a small story about Dr. Fauci that I'll tell you when you're finished.
Well, I mean, he was the guy who basically had to fight the Reagan administration for AIDS money because he knew AIDS was not just a homosexual God's savior disease. And so, I mean, this guy has cut his teeth on some serious stuff. I mean, he's a real guy.
Oh, no, he is one of the reasons why, as much as you bash the government bureaucracy, we have people like this who have served long-term,
yes,
who have a ton of experience. And not just experience with the scientific aspects of this issue, but with the regulatory aspects of this issue. And I think what we're going to find at the end of the day is that the regulations that we've had in place have been as crucial in driving our response as any personality or personal affectation of anyone making the decisions.
Well, from reading this particular study, and I'll tell you why, Lou, I think we need to, again, I'm not going to criticize, I think we need to amend the normal playbook, because according to this disease does not act normally, and I'll tell you why. How can I do this in a Cliff Notes version? It's a new study from Germany that helps to explain the rapid and efficient way in which the virus is spread around the world. The study suggests, now these guys have actually taken people from day one that have gotten infected and done throat swabs and, you know, tested fecal stuff and urine and how you could possibly spread it to other people. So it's your typical Joyman study. I mean, it's pretty efficient, it seems. Says at the same time, study suggests while people can, with mild infections, can still test positive by throat swabs for days and even weeks after their illness, those who are only mildly sick are likely not still infectious by about 10 days after they start to experience. In other words, you're gonna show up on a test, but you're way below the number which you can infect another person. But what it does,
or your test is giving false positives, which is the problem with the tests that they're using in Germany, Korea, and a lot of other places, and it's why FDA rejected it initially.
No, but it stays with you a long time, but at a level you can't give it to somebody else, and you develop a lot of antibody. But here's my concern, Lou, is right now I just was reading yesterday the guidelines for who gets tested, and the people that get tested are the people that have a certain amount of symptoms, and as we get more and more tests, the amount of symptoms is dropping down, right? Okay? So in other words, you can't get
the threshold for testing will drop as we have more tests available, correct?
All right, so what these guys
Not that it appears to make any difference, but yes, that's right.
Right, so, but now, with the study here, in all these different paragraphs here, the bottom line is, they tested you from day 1 through day 20. Okay? So, the problem comes is that you are incredibly infectious in days 1 through 5, like 1,000 times more infectious than you were in the for SARS, which is pretty scary.
Why is that?
It's just your the amount of germs that spew out of your breath or your breathing. They couldn't find any in urine, couldn't find any in stool, or enough to do anybody any harm. But your breathing, it's incredibly contagious. That's
and
why.
Are you breathing out germs on that are pneumonic?
Based
in
on
words,
early
ride in the air, or are you breathing out droplets of moisture that contain the virus?
Whatever it is, it's virus and throat swabs or sputum samples. Anyway, it's.
This is just what we need to talk about before breakfast.
Well, I think people...
I wish I was in front of the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet.
Here's what they're saying. Shedding from the upper airways early in infection makes for a virus that is much harder to contain. The scientists said that it's at peak shedding, people with COVID-19 are emitting more than 1,000 times more virus than was emitted during peak shedding of SARS infection, a fact that likely explains the rapid spread of the virus. The SARS outbreak was contained after about 8,000 cases. The global count of confirmed COVID-19 cases has already topped 110,000. Now, an operative word there is confirmed, because so many people... my point is, Lou, is that you almost, once people have the symptoms, you almost don't need to test them. it doesn't matter. You're just gonna treat them as if you're gonna treat the symptoms. What you need to do, if you can go back and do it, when you kick 40,000 people out of Auburn, you needed to have a random sample of 1,000 people and test those 1,000 people on the way out and find out just where you were. The other part that hopefully we'll get to pretty soon, another article I read here, and I don't know if it's this one. I'll go to the bottom here. There's a comment by, here we go. There was a comment by a lady here. I don't know where this guy's from. He says, my wife, my son, and I also wonder if we were infected with this. Reached sick during early April with these same symptoms. It started out in the sinuses, moved to the throat for a couple days, then progressed into our lungs. Our symptoms lasted about 10 days. My wife tested negative for the flu, but was diagnosed with an unknown respiratory virus. So it appears, Lou, this thing was here in February. Early February.
It was here.
Maybe
it was
even
here
January.
In January.
Right.
In Washington State. And from the, they've genetically tracked the Washington State infections, almost all of them, to a single Chinese, visitor.
Okay. So what I'm saying is, as this goes onward and we get better at hopefully vaccine and other stuff, we're going to start ratcheting the numbers up of people who are now confirmed to have it because we have a test. Before, people might have had it, we didn't know. So you're going to end up with hopefully a very few people dead, an awful lot of people that are, quote, recovered, and other people we're trying to keep the virus from, right? And as time goes by, the recovered column is going to grow pretty high. And now if you contrast that with a gentleman, as everybody knows by what I, strength or weakness, I try and piece all this together. There was a guy from a small town in Illinois who has a manufacturing firm that has now been told he's been asked or put on war footing to where he makes two or three parts for ventilators. And they said they asked him, which he's more than willing to do. We are Americans after all. And I would respond to this administration just like I would anybody else's if I was doing that. He said, we're now going to work essentially two shifts on producing those parts for ventilators. Well, Lou, the dude needs people. So you can't have, a city of Oak Park saying you can't leave your house either. And if you're recovered, we almost need to open up I recovered from the COVID-19 bar, and I get to go, even though I didn't recover. I shouldn't get to go. But, what I'm saying, Lou, we're gonna start having people in all three of these camps, and we need to test earlier, because we need to catch people before they give it to other people. I think this is my advice, not criticism, after reading this article. And we need to figure out people that have recovered. We don't need them at home.
Well, but okay. So let's. And I'm. I don't want to beat the Wuhan virus drum here too long. Because again, the data is all over the place. And so let's just kick around a little bit here. We know now that the tests that were being, that one of the tests that the WHO was promulgating, and by the way, according to what I've seen on a timeline, and then I'd like to see a really good timeline, but what I've seen on a timeline.
By the way, it's in this article, if I can read the whole thing, the timeline.
Okay,
not of the disease, but of the.
But we had tests within 14 days of the Chinese giving us the sequencing, which is, in my opinion, pretty remarkable. But the test that was kicked out by and who promoted that, and it went global along with the test that's being used in South Korea and Germany. Those tests are kicking out a lot of false positives. Now that may ultimately, as much as 50%, by the way, that ultimately may be a good thing, but we just don't know. And so all of this stuff is very, very preliminary. And I would encourage the listeners just to sit back and think about how many contradictory things you can read, how much, information that sits out there is altered, changed, modified within a day or so of it being issued. And then put yourself in the position of a decision maker who is being bombarded with all of this stuff. And how do you respond once you're in the loop on this? One of the interesting things that the study I saw yesterday or the day before indicated that the testing and propensity of testing kits does not seem to make much of a difference in terms of fatality rates or hospitalization rates. In other words, knowing that people you know, had it or were carriers and not knowing it doesn't seem really to make much difference in terms of the treatment and how effective the treatment is.
Well, if it can,
one of the things.
Well, what I'm saying, Louis, it does affect you.
Make a difference. Well, no, it doesn't. It means you might have a little bit better data, but in terms of your estimates as to how many people you've got that are actually sick.
Okay, but in terms of
outcomes, it doesn't seem to make much difference.
From what you were talking about, that test coming out with false positives, reading this German article here, I'm not so sure there's anything wrong with the test, because this article says that the test almost needs to give you an amount that's in your system, not just a yes or a no, because the virus hangs with you for quite a while at a level that's not a problem for you or anybody else.
And this that would be a perfect explanation as to why, whether you have testing or not, doesn't seem to make much difference in terms of outcomes.
Well, it is if you could figure out a level, and you realize that Lou's got two parts of these per million, that means he's a recovered person. That's just as important as, right?
It could be, but that's down the road, Chief.
Right.
You know, and that's a month from now when we're able to analyze a little bit better. At the point where we're making these decisions, we aren't seeing that kind of stuff. And if you're a decision maker, and again, I'm just trying to. I was involved in something like this with the anthrax situation, and I think I've explained on the show to the listeners my involvement in when anthrax was a thing back in the early aughts.
It's still a thing if you're a cow.
Pardon me?
It's still a thing if you're a cow.
Well, it's a thing if you're a member of the American military, because you're still being inoculated with a vaccine that hasn't been properly vetted. But my point is, when you're trying to make these decisions, and they're trying to make decisions right now, and the pressure is to do things immediately, the data that you're getting is giving you a lot of different signals. And so if you're a decision maker and you're being told, we got to test, and at the same time somebody's telling you it doesn't seem to make any difference in terms of outcome, how many people had it or are with it or might be carrying it, then you say, okay, well then I'm not going to kick a lot of resources. Why should I kick resources into testing when I can kick resources into, you know, ventilator production or vaccine or treatment? And so that, ideally, you want to do it all, but you can't. So this is my point. It's a long way of saying what I said earlier, which is there's a lot of data. It doesn't all point in the same direction. If you're a decision maker, you end up doing the best you can with what you've got in place. And you know, hindsight is always 20/20. The thing that bothers me is that we had lots of hindsight on swine flu in 2009, but the president then wasn't bashed, and I think we all know why. This particular president is being bashed, and hindsight coming in over and over again. I don't think you can make that call. I think there's way too much that's going on with information coming in and the decision making process that sits out there, for us to make a reasoned determination as to what happened, is what is happening with this administration.
From my perspective, in terms of
the president who shoots out these idiotic tweets that just inflame people. And I don't know whether he's trying to troll or whatever, but it's not the first time I've wished his aides could get his phone away from him.
Or get him out of the can so long or something, you know.
Yeah.
Let me real quick, Lou, I don't want to beat this up because, and like I said, I started reading these articles where somebody shipped me one from Britain the other day. I don't know if it was, but one of the listeners, sent me an email the other day saying that they had some elective surgery a couple weeks ago and went to the hospital to get checked up. And they were they took their temperature on entering the hospital and let them move forward. Okay, now, me reading this article, I'm going to say right away that is going to let you know whether that particular person has the virus or has an issue, that maybe if they have a temperature of 102, you're now able to give them the test, and then maybe you keep him in a hospital. So I'm not saying it's useless. But after reading this article, you're, by the time you have the temperature, you're probably one-tenth as contagious as you were 2 days before. So I'm saying if you're trying to protect the other people in the hospital, you're not doing any good with that, is all I'm saying after reading this.
Okay. Well, I mean, and that may be the case. This is one study.
Well, but it's also, it's enough, this actually is about the second or third thing I've read that said this disease acts differently.
Oh, well that's, I don't think there's a problem with that. I mean, it's one or two studies. It's very early on. They're doing the best they can with predictions on this. So, rather than finger pointing, I'm just interested in sitting back and saying, okay, let's mobilize to deal with the stuff we know we have to deal with, which is an elderly population.
Yep.
That is highly susceptible, and expanding the ability to treat this issue as we understand how it spreads, or get a better understanding of how it spreads, and an understanding of how we can isolate, how isolation may be our only and best reaction.
Well, but it comes down to people making decisions, Lou. And if I'm the chairman of Auburn University and I read this article, my behind clenches. I'm going, what did I just do?
Well, if I'm the chairman of Auburn University, I say, okay, that's an interesting article. Where's its validation?
Those guys are never wrong.
I got 50 other articles telling me.
Okay, not 50. They've taken people's stuff every day from the time onset of the disease. My point is now I'm more worried if I'm that chairman of sending somebody live home than I am closing the university.
If I'm the chairman, I'm being told your best bet in terms of treating this is to get people out of Auburn, Alabama, which has a very limited number of beds, and get them to their home cities, which will be able to better manage an outbreak if one is occurring and if these people are infectious, and will be better able to self isolate than we will.
I think it was. Anyway, I'm not going to beat this one up because we've got to talk about some stocks, but I think it's not here or anywhere else. Can't stay in my bar after 2 o'clock. I don't care where. Yeah, tell us your Fauci story.
Well, so I when the anthrax vaccine came online in the late 1990s, we challenged it. We being myself and another lawyer named Mark Zaid out of D.C. We challenged the vaccine along with some very courageous servicemen who basically forfeited their careers. It effectively cost me mine and reserves to sue FDA and the Secretary of Defense on the use of this vaccine, which was effectively an experimental vaccine, and it was being used without the informed consent of the service members. It's a federal law that requires you to get consent if you're using experimental drugs.
Lou, how do you cross the line from experimental to non-experimental?
You go through the regulatory process under FDA regulations to place the drug in what's called investigational new drug status. In other words, you undertake a regimen of testing. You identify, you apply with the FDA to do a series of tests to determine whether the vaccine is doing what it's supposed to be doing for the people that it's supposed to protect.
So this was even further up the chain than the Jerry Ford's swine flu vaccine.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
This was a vaccine that had been developed in the 1950s and was arguably blessed for use in limited circumstances in the 1980s, and then the FDA decided with DOD to pencil whip their testing and make it efficacious for airborne.
Was it originally designed for people or animals?
No, it was designed for people.
Okay.
It was designed for veterinarians who were handling animals and animal carcasses and things like that.
Okay.
So they were getting it. They were getting the anthrax through skin tests and skin exposure. It's called cutaneous anthrax, and so that it was approved for that, although the testing wasn't nearly rigorous enough. In any event, at some point, the Army decides, you know what, we're gonna make this our vaccine of choice against weaponized anthrax, which is inhalation anthrax. And the vaccine had never been properly vetted, or at least that was our argument. And in fact, the Army had actually filed an application with the FDA and the manufacturer to investigate whether this vaccine actually did what it was supposed to do. And they had filed an investigational new drug application to start the process. So that, under FDA regulations, that places the drug in investigational new drug status.
Can you back up a second? On a disease that's, I guess it's around in labs and so forth, but how do you test it? You know, you're not going to expose the people of the virus to anthrax to see if it works, do you?
Well, I mean, that was, you know, it's gotten a lot harder to do that testing since we stopped the draft. But, no, you have to go through simulations, you have to go through animal studies, you have to do culture studies. There are other ways to do it. The bottom line was that none of this had been done on inhalation anthrax, and the original test was not indicative of this anyway.
So you're not saying it didn't work. You're saying
Army,
right.
I'm sorry.
You're saying whatever they could and should have done, they didn't. They didn't.
And there was no argument that they didn't do it because the Army had already recognized that the vaccine was not licensed for weaponized anthrax, and that's why they put this application in. Well, we sued. Well, Dr. Fauci was part of the...
Wait a minute. What is the difference between regular old anthrax and weaponized anthrax?
Well, regular anthrax, the spores get airborne and you can inhale them, but it's not particularly viable unless you're actually, you know, right next to the animal carcass. And there's a lot of anthrax in the animal carcass, and these spores float up, and you get a big lung full of them. So weaponized anthrax, you take the bacteria, you coat it with a protective coating, and then you manufacture it in such a way, create it in such a way that these individual coated bacteria don't clump together or stick together, but instead disperse widely in the air. So that you can literally create a cloud of this stuff that drifts over an area, and these things stay active on the surface for days. And if you inhale a small number of them, a relatively small number of them, you're going to get the infection.
Oh, so it's anthrax on super steroids, basically.
Basically, yeah. So in any event, we had all this evidence that the drug was experimental. Under both FDA regulations and in reality. And Dr. Fauci was one of the cohort of people who came out of the woodwork at National Institute of Health and FDA saying, no, it's been properly licensed. It's perfectly effective against this kind of airborne anthrax. And, you know, I literally, as a lawyer, was in arguing and in the position of arguing that people like Dr. Fauci and that the National Institutes of Health did not know what they were talking about. And how would you like to be in that situation? And the short answer was, we won. They didn't know what they were talking about. But not because it was a medical issue, but because it was a regulatory issue. And so I think Dr. Fauci has done a fantastic job here. Not in the least, because he provides a rational sounding, thoughtful counterpoint to the president, who frequently, you know, just runs off half cocked. So I admire him and I'm thankful for that. He is extremely knowledgeable in this area, and I wouldn't challenge him in any way, shape, or form on medicine or anything else. I bumped heads with him and with a bunch of people like him in the early aughts that causes me, and this is another reason I'm skeptical of experts, that causes me to sit back and basically say, you know, I get it, but you guys are making arguments based on incomplete data, and that's, you know, I'm not going to start finger pointing or saying we need to absolutely do this. I'm willing to watch this play out. I give people the benefit of the doubt under these circumstances. because I've watched this system break down in a case that I was intimately involved with. I watched all these people come online and say, yeah, yeah, this is fine, this is proper, when in fact the situation was that it wasn't proper.
Once the party says that takes a position, you know they got to defend the position even if they know it's wrong halfway through.
I don't know that these people did know that it was wrong.
Well, maybe. Well, we got to take that off the break here, but
I do think they believe that they had to protect DOD.
Well, like I said, SP futures down 35, Dow futures down 312, NASDAQ futures down 48. I feel like, God, we're not down limit or something. This is a good morning so far. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, I'm on Face Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Lou Michaels with us from Colorado. He skedaddled out of Italy. Don't blame him on that one. SP Futures. Now, by the way, for those of you who trade these things or are looking at them, we are now looking at the June month. March is history. So we're in the SPIMs, the S&P M is June. So that's where we are. We're in the NASDAQ Futures down 103, much quieter in the last few days. We were down limit and so forth, so we're not there at all, which is good. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 66.8%. These guys are down, but rationally down. FTSE down 74.1%. CAC around down 17.5%. Over in Asia, Nikkei down 173.1%. Shanghai down 26.1%. Hang Seng down 582.2%. However, South Korea stocks were down 8%. after they halted trading earlier. SoftBank were the big losers over there. Oil, well, just to review on yesterday, Dow Jones was down 1338, S&P's 131, NASDAQ down 344, so that's why I'm pretty happy to see a rational morning here so far. Oil, up 232, but get this, up 232, up 11% to 2269, so careful with those percentages. Brent up 125, 2613, because I traded in the pit when the oil went through 120 in the first Gulf War, never thought I'd see this. Natural gas, 164. ARPOP, 64 cents. Even Lou isn't laughing at me now with my Suburban. 10-year yield, 1.14. So up a bunch since the Fed started doing all this stuff. The bond, minus 0.24, was minus 0.79 last week. Get a load of this. Ding, 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 Matty. Japan, 0.1% positive. Positive. That's unreal compared to where they've been for the last however long. What do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
40 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Very quiet, Chief, on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. No issues at all. Coming in on the Edens or Kennedy. Same for the Eisenhower, Stevenson, Southside expressways, Lakeshore Drive, suburban tollways. All quiet. One crash in the area. It's out in the western suburbs, out near Carroll Stream. Lies Road at Gary Avenue. There is a crash. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, we warm up a little bit, but we'll have more rain in the forecast, as we'll be raining with a high of 57. Right now it's overcast and 41 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies, mild temperatures, a high of just 62. Right now it is cloudy and 50 degrees in Phoenix. In sports, the Bears made another splash, making a trade to acquire former Jaguar and former Philadelphia Eagle Nick Foles. The Bears send the Jaguars a fourth-round pick in exchange for Foles. The Bears assume $20.125 million remaining of guaranteed money on Nick Foles' contract. He will compete with Mitchell Trubisky for the Bears' starting QB position.
Matty, what's a conditional fourth-round pick?
Whoever said that.
That's what it was.
It was a compensatory fourth-round pick.
Oh, sorry. What does that mean?
The Bears were compensated that pick for a different move they made.
I think. All right. Okay. So
yeah, the 140th overall.
Is it the regular fourth round pick or is it additional one or?
It's one that they acquired.
Okay. All right.
Compensatory pick. Yeah.
It's not like baseball where there's extra picks between the rounds.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
So yeah, this one's the 140th pick overall, and the Bears send that over to Jacksonville along with assuming $20 million of guaranteed money. For Nick Foles' services. Tom Brady is expected to sign with Tampa Bay for approximately $30 million a year. So that should be announced here officially soon. Lastly, we're doing In This Day in Sports History. And for March 19th, of course, Michael Jordan rejoined the Bulls after a 17-month retirement to beat the Pacers in his first game back on March 19th, 1995. A couple of other interesting notes on this day in history. Jack Nicklaus, Chief, won the PGA Tournament Players Championship in 1978 on this date, his third TPC title. Chief.
One of the good things about the bad news in sports, you've seen a lot of old stuff with Jack and those guys, and it's good to watch. You know, it's kind of my day.
Let me just start. I do want to talk a couple of sports issues. Number one, does anybody think that Mitchell Trubisky is competing for anything right now?
No.
That's a good point.
The second thing is, why is the GM at Chicago still the GM?
An even better question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. They bet the farm on this kid, and I understand that. Somebody thought he looked really good or whatever. They didn't just bet the farm on him. They traded to bet the farm on him. They bypassed, three other quarterbacks who have proven to be, potential superstars for this guy. And he can't, okay, fine. That was your GM choice. Let's get another GM. I don't understand.
Not only that, but he's whiffed on every other first-round pick he's done, too. So it's not just the Trubisky one, which is the biggest one, and the fact that he passed up on Mahomes and he passed up on Watson, among others. But Leonard Floyd is now gone, former first-round pick. Kevin White, the first-round pick, what he played, Chief, five games for the Bears?
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, he was the eighth overall pick. I mean, it's just one after another. They're just not drafting well. He's hit on some later round picks.
I was going to say, if you grade him from,
he's done a little better in the fourth and fifth round and stuff like that, but you can't whiff on all of your first round picks. I mean, they're so valuable. I mean, those guys need to be all pro level players.
Those are the guys that you expect to at least start for you. Yeah.
Is he the one who drafted Kyle Long? I don't think so, is he?
No, he didn't.
So when did he come
in? I want to just discuss very briefly a sports and law issue that is developing, and I'm going to mention, you know, two things that'll probably cause listeners to fast forward, so I'm just going to let them get their fingers over the space on their phones ready now. And this is the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team's lawsuit against U.S. Soccer, which is really, from a legal perspective, really becoming something interesting in terms of both the way it's being prosecuted and the arguments that are being made. So the women are suing because they claim they are not being paid equally to the men. About 2 weeks ago, the parties have both filed for what's called summary judgment, which is a way of that basically a summary judgment motion tells the court or asks the court to dispose of the case before there's a trial because there are no issues of fact. Both sides admit to certain things, and because both sides have admitted to certain things, there are no issues of fact that the jury has to resolve. It can all be resolved by the court. And both sides have filed for that. So in their filing, the men's team lawyers make a statement to the effect that, listen, one of the reasons that some of the individual men are being paid more than the individual women's stars are that the men are coming out of a more competitive selection process. The level of skill that the men are required to maintain is higher because there are more men playing soccer, number one. And to be competitive at an international level, men have to be more skilled because the quality of the competition at the international level is so much better in the men's league than it is in the women's league. All right. You may or may not agree with
Lou, what's the difference in revenue?
I think the women's team has actually made slightly more or made more than the men's team in terms of merchandising and stuff like that.
Well, I mean, the women's team plays in Soldier Field, they get more people at a higher price than the men?
No. There's no question that the women don't generate nearly as much revenue as the men do. Because the men's soccer it's like the WNBA versus the NBA. Men's soccer is a much more popular sport, at least at this stage. Ironically, when you look at the amount of money in total that's been put into the women's program by U.S. Soccer, it's actually more into the women's program than it is into the men's program. But that part of the argument is, I mean, that's just another argument. Anyway, this statement that the men were more skilled caused an uproar. And a bunch of women on the women's team said, that's ridiculous, they're not more skilled than us, and this is pure misogynism. And it ultimately resulted in the head of U.S. Soccer, who was a guy, resigning. And a woman taking his place, and she immediately disavows this what I thought was a fairly straightforward argument. The short answer is, yeah, you're almost mixing, again, like the WNBA, you're mixing apples and oranges when you start talking about the skill levels required and the playing styles of men's teams versus women's teams. They're different. You know, because the men's game is played at a much higher level, and I don't think there's any question about that. Everybody points to the story where the U.S. women's national team was beaten by a U-15 boys team in scrimmages. So, I mean, I don't really think there's much dispute of that. Does anybody think that?
Well, I mean, There was a time, Lou, when I was...
The NBA team would match up well against a college team?
There was a time, Lou, when I was a fairly skilled basketball player, but if you were 2 inches taller than me and you could jump, you were better, right?
Well, I mean, it's... Anyway, this created an uproar And now the head of U.S. soccer, who's female, has now said, you know, this was a hurtful statement to make in their brief. And I was astounded because, quite frankly, had the lawyers not made that statement, the lawyers for the U.S. men's team or U.S. soccer not made that statement, they would have been guilty of malpractice. You know, you make every argument that you can, and this is a fairly straightforward argument. Now, whether you think the analysis makes sense, you can debate that, but I don't think there's any real debate.
What do you suppose
of quality of play or whatever?
Well,
you
what do you suppose happens?
Of play or skills or whatever, that the men's team comes out of a bigger, broader, more competitive in terms of athleticism and other things pipeline than the women's program does. And okay, fine. Whether that leads to better wages, I don't know.
Well, if you drop back to some sort of a, and I surely wouldn't call this a be all to end all, but if you drop back to a, you know, players get half the revenue, type of thing, which some of the pro teams are going to, I got to believe that. I mean, would their salaries be the same if they went on a formula like that? I'm thinking no.
I don't know, and I mean the short answer is who brings in the gates, and who brings in the revenue. I mean, this is the entertainment business. That's what this is. So anyway, that argument that I thought that was fascinating to watch the your client basically stand up and say, well, you hurt the feelings of the other side. So we're gonna repudiate that statement. And I'm going, yeah, this is litigation. You say all kinds of things in litigation that, you know, aren't really necessarily politically correct or even nice.
Or even true.
You say, look, this is a stupid argument or here are the facts. But for the client to challenge the factual assertions of the attorneys in such a way, when I don't think there's really much dispute about it, I thought was disturbing. So that's one thing.
See, Lou, I could never see you on a CTA bus, but if you did that in high school like I did, one of the things, and they couldn't sell the advertisement up on the wall when they used to have advertisements on the wall, they don't anymore. One of the fill-in posters was a saying that says, when the truth hurts, it should.
Yeah. Well, this is one side of it. So the other side of it is, The women's team attorneys, and again, they're advocating for their clients, move to strike the expert testimony on the men's team. So both sides hire experts to come in and talk about what the positions are of the other side and why they're wrong and why your position is right. So one of the experts that the men's team brought in was a guy who is the former head of the National Labor Relations Board. Now, the NLRB deals with union issues. And you would say, what does this have to do with soccer? A lot, in fact, because the women's team is unionized, while the men's team is not. And because they're unionized, they negotiated with legal representation and the ability to strike and a bunch of other things. They negotiated their compensation package with the U.S. soccer. And one of the things that is a principle that is almost sacrosanct in U.S. employment law is that absent some showing of bad faith or discriminatory animus, you don't mess with a union contract. If somebody negotiates a contract or a union negotiates a contract with an employer, the courts generally will say, we ain't touching that, and we're not touching the terms. If you didn't like the terms you negotiated, then you go to your union representative and you negotiate new terms. But you do not, we are not going to allow individual employees to undercut our labor union law and union deference with individual lawsuits about terms of employment when you negotiated these same terms.
Now, when you say that, Lou, I'm gonna say that I would never win this case, especially if I was arguing against you. But that sort of sucks when the people in the NFL negotiated, say, the rookie contracts, and the rookies aren't even at the table, and it's a union shop. I wasn't represented there.
Yep. But so the response is, if you don't want to join that union, then don't go play in the NFL.
Well, that again sucks.
I'm just saying that's the courts give a tremendous. I mean, you can challenge the union, and you can move to decertify, but our legal code.
I mean, I don't want to decertify them at all. I'm saying they didn't represent me as a rookie because I wasn't there,
But you want to join the club. If you come in, if you're going to be hired into a union shop, you are accepting the terms the union has negotiated.
Except, I'm going to say, people didn't used to be as screwed up as they are now.
There's nothing in the National Labor Relations Act that says, well, things are really screwed up now, so we get.
Well, but I'm saying you don't.
We allow you out.
But I mean, it's one thing for you to have an agreement. I'm going to say back in the day, if you're a joiner or something at Pullman, a welder, and you're steel workers, there might have been an apprentice number for a while, but
there always was in those places.
Okay, but then I'm saying the journeyman and the master were a couple of bucks apart. There was no thing about you guys are getting paid too much at 30 bucks an hour. Well, fine, keep us at 30. Bring the new guy on for 10 years at 10 and we're even. I mean, that never happened, but now it is.
Well, but it is. It's a variation of that, and it's the fact that the unions work to protect seniority. That's their most valuable thing, and they protect older workers who are not as competent or who are not going to perform well against younger, less senior competition.
That's
the job security of the union.
Right, whoa. Protecting somebody is a lot different than saying, I still want my 30, charge the other guy, the other guy only gets 10. You never had that kind of disparity in the 70s.
I'm going to say that you didn't, because the players' union didn't have the kind of.
I'm not talking about the players' union, I'm talking about regular union stuff.
I've dealt with union contracts where exactly this kind of thing happened. It didn't happen to the same degree that it does with rookie contracts, but it certainly happened, and the reaction of the players' union in capping rookie pay was perfectly logical, because the union members, all of whom were longtime NFL players, were tired of seeing guys coming in who had not taken a snap in the NFL getting more money than veterans who had played for 10 or 15 years.
Well, hey, I got a quote of the day from you, Lou. Dr. Zeus, how did it get so late so soon? That's a good one.
Well,
hey, I had a question.
My point with the women's team is that the arguments that they're trying to shut this guy down on, this NLRB chair down on, are pretty interesting and make perfect sense to me, which is, and his point was, look, you negotiated this. If you don't like the deal you negotiated, your argument is not with U.S. Soccer. Your argument is with your players' union. And of course, what they're trying to do is strike that testimony. The women's attorneys are trying to strike that testimony because, in my opinion, it's correct. And it's very damaging to their position. Now, the federal judge may discount it. But it seems to me that the first thing that I picked up on when I heard about the lawsuit was, wait a minute, aren't the women unionized? If they're unionized, the courts should not be in the mix on this to try to determine what the correct rate of pay is, because the employees themselves have already done that. So again, absent some showing of bad faith or absent some showing of discriminatory animus on the part of the union team that negotiated the contract or something like that, I don't understand why that negotiation would be overturned. It would run counter to a lot of other legal.
Lou, sort of the same. You only got a minute here. Same vein. We're going to start bailing everybody out again, and people are already squealing, and I don't blame them. How come? Does a moral hazard extend to big people, or is it just little people?
Moral hazard extends to the people who are going to provide the most jobs and the most votes.
You give money to United Airlines.
You know that.
You give money to United Airlines again, without a piece of the stock? I'm saying no. $37 billion in buyback, Lou, and now they want 50.
I'm not going to those are great points to make in an academic setting or over the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters breakfast buffet, but in the real world of politics, which as Chicago, who was it in Chicago said politics ain't beanbag?
Right.
In the real, maybe it was Kim Fox. How in the world could you people elect Kim Fox again?
I voted against
never
her.
Never mind.
I voted against her too.
Lou, you got a
dick. In the world of these calculations, the short answer is I'm not going to allow a company that employs, you know, X thousand number of people and is essential to our national transportation infrastructure, I'm not going to allow them to go under.
They paid themselves so much they don't own one plane, Lou.
I'm just saying that's not going to. We'll second guess the business judgments later.
All right. Then we'll bail them out 10 years from now. Take care, buddy. Talk to you next week. Be safe.
Yes, sir. You too.
S&P futures now down 61. We're leaking. NASDAQ futures down 113. Back, Mr. Fari Hamzy.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com. That's Audrey Johnson at Realtor.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howes, Mr. Matt Weber. On the board, we have Safari Hamzy with us. S&P Futures down 53, NASDAQ Futures down 105. And just so you know, one of the side effects is when you keep slimy millennials, dirty slimy millennials that throw stuff everywhere like Matty Weber, away from places. The Venice canals are clear as day, Matty. Nobody's there.
Oh, interesting.
People like you, young travelers.
I saw the big satellite map that showed the pollution in Italy is decreased by like 50%. Like, you used to see the big red sort of cloud, and now it's down to yellow and trending toward green.
Well, you can tell China how well they're doing business-wise by the amount of power, the amount of pollution, and more the price of copper. And all, I mean, the pollution's way down, the copper's way down. We have to believe electrical energy's way down, so I don't think they're back much. Fari, how are you?
Oh, never better. You know, we were down slightly last night. Then we met around 5 a.m. We were very high. Well, not very high. We're up like 12 handles on the S&P. We're down like half. So, you know, we've taken a ride down with this sucker. Now, clearly kicked ass of everybody on Time and Digest. And now I guess people are giving me estimates now. What about them? And I told him, I said, you guys are any good? The Time and Digest. They're going to start tracking you. They'll let you know. Not a problem. If it's that easy, try it. But try it publicly. You know, get naked. If you're that good, get naked. Let's see how good you are. So then after a while, they give up and they say, well, Tommy, where is the bottom? I said, you know where the bottom is? Let me give you a prominent Trump kid. I don't know. Let's say Joe Kernan. Or, I don't know, Dr. J. When they throw in the towel, that's the bottom. You buy that one. It's true.
Well, it's
true.
Because
somebody big has to go down, who was a big, big cheerleader for this idiot. When those guys go down, then I'm going to buy the market. Listen, the Marcus Mazzito, day one, says Fatty, because he's a biotech guy. I've talked to some of my investment companies. They're telling me no vaccine, no bottle. That simple. You know why? I don't care how much. Remember, Fed can't kill it, virus. No matter what you do, are you going to get on an airplane if there's no vaccine?
They can cause stagflation, which they're well on their way to doing.
That was how you convinced me. I said, yeah. Okay, buddy, we're going to stay short. Let's go. Let me give you what the problem is. It's not my work. It's controversial. You got to listen to it carefully. It will come out. Let's come out publicly on this show with you guys. This will come out. Not when he's in power, because he's going to block everything else just like that during the impeachment on witnesses and facts and documents. We had the problem back in December. He knew this was coming. But he was in the middle of impeachment, and he was negotiating with the vice premier of China about the trade deal. The problem was the reagents. We didn't have the reagents for test kits. Guess who makes those reagents? China.
Yep.
Because we shift all of our chemical, the EPA stuff over. EPA because of EPA. Over the years, not just one time. Over the years we have. They offered us, not the genome, but also the reagents. You wouldn't agree. Because that would make you look weak. And, they said, how could you give into that? No, we're America. America first. We gotta do this. Okay. Senor. 3 months we wasted. Do you know where that curve is going to be? Well, about 10,000 now. Do you know on Saturday, on Sunday, we were at 2,900. This is exploding. That's why the
I think it already has.
It's not unreal.
I think it already has exploded. We're just now starting to count it.
Well, I think absolutely right. We're now checking things haphazardly. Look at how much PPE we are behind. We could have ramped up on masks, on shield, on our face shields, on the glove. Not, we haven't done that. And the other thing, I was telling my sister, as you know, she runs 700 hotels. Some of these hotels are going to be zombies. Not just hers, everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody is shutting down. I said, Nahid, why don't you make a deal with the government, make him into a hospitals, just short term. They don't need oxygen, they don't need everything else. All they need is some power, isolation, and dirt cheap. That's what we're going to probably do. Turn some of these hotels, because listen, they're at 15% occupancy. You can't even pay the mortgage.
She's raising money for her partners. One of the contributors of the show.
Different partners. These are Hiltons. These are Marriotts. These are all franchise, right?
Well, the Marriotts
to
and...
make sure they don't go upside down 90 days from now. I need to... And no notice of default.
The Marriott in Orlando is 20% full.
We haven't seen nothing yet here. Those are problems.
I'm not going to go through it again because I went through it fairly in detail earlier in the show.
Sure.
There's a German study here, Barry, and it has to do with, you know, essentially charting the disease and the progress and how contagious you are from really day one. And,
right.
And the disease is really unlike, well, any I've ever heard of. It doesn't mean I know much about
I
disease.
Agree.
And it basically, you're amazingly contagious early on, and as soon as you have symptoms, you become very less contagious very rapidly. So,
That's why we have a good number of recovered. If you look at the gross data internationally, you know, globally, the recoveries are pretty good.
Yeah, and so there's really...
So what you're saying is supported by data, yes.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, this German study, they said in the first few days, you're 1,000 times more contagious before you even know you have it than SARS. Then as soon as you know you have it, it drops precipitously, and halfway through your recovery, you're barely contagious. And by the time you're done, you're not. And,
well, you know, at 220,643 confirmed as of this speak, this moment as we talk. I just updated John Hopkins, COVID-19 website. 84,000 have recovered. That's quite a bit.
I'll bet.
9,000 deaths. Rest of them are in between.
I'll bet, Fari, if you go back to January and people had the flu and nobody knew what it was, I'll bet we have 250,000 that recovered and don't even know it.
Could be. Yeah. The estimate is we'll get about 50 to 150 million inflicted by, this is a doctor for the Congress itself, and I think we may come to that at a 2% even. If you think at 2%, which is a very low estimate, currently we're running much higher than that. I think Italy is at like 7% right now.
7% of what?
I mean, we're gonna have problems with mortuaries. Let me put it this way. Remember, you can't just bury them. You have to be disinfected during the burial. There's a bit of chemicals or cremated. Yeah. These are problems nobody talks about.
Well, I think that we will be able to take care of people better here than they did in Italy. And our population is not as old.
I agree with you there. Sure.
And I think we are closer to summer when I think it'll the natural part about. No.
Look at no. I disagree. A lot of people say that. Hold on. Especially some Trumpkins. No. Look at Australia. Look at Brazil. Look at South Africa. They have it. No. It's not as bad. It's a little bit less. Okay. But those are summertime right now. Look. How many people are in Australia getting it? Look at South Africa. Look at southern part of South America. The southern part, you know. Brazil, Argentina. They have cases there. So, you know. No.
Well, the only,
I,
the
I
only,
don't buy that.
The only,
it's going to kill, die.
The
it's
only,
going to slow it down a little bit, but not much.
The only criticism I have for the people that are doing it, and again, I'm not going to be a... What's his name? Ackman to come on TV and talk his position and scare the hell out of people.
Oh, yeah. Well, so is Icon. Keep on talking to a book.
Yeah.
Listen, right now in Italy, the death rate is 8.3%.
Well, again, that's...
Do that number right
Again,
now.
Fart, it's That's the people that you're working at, that you choose to count. I mean, that's the people. I mean, we say every year that the flu kills, what, 1, 2, 3/10% of the people, but they don't have a count because how many people have the flu and never go to the doctor? It's probably way less than that. But Italy seems to have a, you know, quite. But I guess where I'm going with this is right now we're our testing guidelines are, we're only testing people that start to get a whole bunch of symptoms. And what I'm saying from what I'm reading the last couple of days,
they can test everybody.
It's more
what they did in Italy.
Well, when you
test everybody immediately.
Well, I'm saying
if
you don't.
We have hold on. If we have all the tests that you want, as he said on March 6th, Trump said, okay, why? We have all the tests we want. Why are we not testing everybody?
I think first of all, that's not possible. But here's, if you could go
back.
Okay, but if you could go back a week or two, when the first university closed, which the first I heard of was Auburn, they might not have been the first. All right, pick a number. You got 40,000 kids. Before we go anywhere, we have 1,000 test kits. Give me 1,000 random numbers. I'm testing those students. The last thing you want is some kid who's second day into this thing, contagious as all get out, to get on the train or the plane home and then go sit with his family. The last thing you want to have happen. Right? And yet, I think that's what we did. Or maybe did. Right? The last thing you want to do, look at the family. Was it in Ohio, Manny? I saw it last night. That the family is at home and now 7 people in the family got it and 2 have died. Last thing you want to do is tell people to go home in place, and one person has it, and there's no test, and all of a sudden they all got it. I mean, most people are way closer together at home than they ever are at work.
Yeah, exactly. You got to test everybody. This is. I mean, listen, right now, I was thinking of last night, talking about my friends who have been here for years. I said, what if I want to get a test now? I just want to make sure I don't have it, you know? I've been very careful. Listen, my last outing was Valentine's Day. I've been out. Very small amount of shopping. Insert, boom, like a steel team. I need this. This is a list. Come in with a mask, gloves, get this out. And a mask, I use N95 with a seal like you have as a fighter jet around your face and nose. Boom. I mean, not your face, but your nose and ears. And I also have a large glass shield covers over my glasses. Okay, going. They look at me like I'm some weirdo. That's fine.
Well, that's quite the look,
right? And I cannot risk. I mean, I'm over 60, so I cannot. I'm in high risk category. I cannot take any chance. Get the stuff and get out and come back. Rest of it is Amazon. Boom.
Yeah,
so last time I was talking to a friend of mine, I said, "What if I wanted to get a test on you?" He goes, "Good luck. You have to prove that you need the test."
Well, that's right. And by the time you prove you need it, you almost don't want it, or you don't even care if you get it. Why don't you just go get a Lakers uniform? You get a test then.
Go where?
Get a basketball uniform. Tell me you're on one of the teams. You get a test.
I'm wrong color.
Well, that's I didn't want to say that, but you know.
Well, I'll say it. I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm not running for an office. I print my own money as legal. We took about 9,800 points out of a Dow in 3 weeks. You don't have to answer to anybody, all right? And these Trump kids down here, I told them, we're going to erase what Trump has done. Back in, like, January, when they were raw, as far as you two buyers, he's a good guy, it's time for you to understand, we've done so well, the impeachment is going to go away, none of this is going to work. I said, really? Okay, buddies. Now, they're bleeding as they walk. You know what we say in the Latin? Did you study Latin?
Yeah, yes, I did. 4 years.
Okay. You know what we call this event in Latin for the Trumpkins?
I didn't say I was good at it for 4 years.
Okay, but do you know what we say to Trumpkins in this event like this happens?
What?
No Vaselino.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Fari, as you know, I've always, you know, I do this protective thing all the time. And I've got some people in gold.
Well, yeah, you mean during the Vaseline operation?
Well, what I'm saying is in the last 15 months, I've had, you know, a lot of clients that have set up and I think are relatively happy. But I also had all kinds of...
We're so busy. We have never so much clients. looking at the charts. And it just won. As a matter of fact, I've told him, guys, we give you direction and targets, but watch out on the option trades because the vols are so huge.
Yeah, the vols are so huge.
The spreads are so wide. This is not the best time. The best time, best use of this right now is futures.
Well, I've never...
Because 100 delta and... wait a minute. You have no spread. The 100 delta and what else? And you know, and it's open 24 hours a day. So these moves are nighttime. Look at what happened last Sunday. Right. You know, bravado on the Friday, and I was short, long. Then the news came, it rallied. I waited on 78.50 and up. I start shorting. I didn't know where the top is. I got stuck with a bunch of stuff at 7,900 near the close. My heart was pounding coming out of my chest. And people in the chat room said, "What are you going to do?" I said, "Hold on. Please, just watch me. Let me think." And I don't know where it's going to go. I said, "Hey, it's going to go to 8,000 on this rate." Well, you know what? My way out is either fold, take the hit, but walk away and give a couple of days of earnings back, back to the market, or let me see if I can, when the cash closes. Guess what? Cash closes, they still, that sucker, 100 points down on NASDAQ, NASDAQ futures, 100 points. I covered some, then I said, "Barry, this may continue." Guess what? I left some. I've never done this. Never done it. Maybe once in my life, like, I don't know, a few years back. Left some, or maybe by error. Never did this. I left some shorts on NQs. Saturday, the Fed comes and they're going to do $1.5 trillion. Oh, I got sick. I mean, I threw up. My adrenaline rush was so bad because I'm stuck now. I can't even get out. Markets are closed. And they're going to do $1.5 trillion. I said, I'm cooked. What was it, 5 p.m.?
Sorry, everybody.
They talked about it, and then they came out at 5 p.m. on Sunday. By 6:18, we were limit down, buddy.
Yep.
Limit down on the futures. We were down 300 points. Coverage came out. I said, "Thank you. Going for a drink."
These
unbelievable.
The game,
unbelievable.
Everything they do right
last
now.
Last night, we were up. Everything. Were like, "What are you going to do? We're going to go long now." I said, "No. We're going to hold. We meet our first objective. We erase what Trump has done. Next one is 14.8. What is 14.8? That's a halfway." Matt, you may want to write this down. Here's the target. 14,800. That's a 50% retracement from all-time high that came in on February 12th on the Dow, which was 29,600. Okay? Once we get there, then we recalibrate. But I don't think we're going to stop until we get to 14,800. And that's only 5,000 points away from here. It's not too bad. We can get there this week. Maybe
yeah.
Next week.
Yeah, we can. Hey, I got a question for you. As I start to get my list together,
Ralphie, you could ask any.
Well, I mean, the difference is if this is a 60-day phenomenon, you know, it's gonna be a rough 60 days. If it's a 6-month phenomenon, I mean, I don't know how much money the Fed thinks they can print out, but you can't create wealth with paper money, and I think the population is starting to understand that. That's why you see them. They send everybody $1,000. All they're doing is debasing the currency. I mean, not that I don't want my check, but everybody else gets theirs. But I think we need to figure out for a lot of things. But right now, people say the market's down 30%. Well, the transportation area is down more than that. But now your list of stocks. Some of these stocks.
How about Russell? How about Russell?
It's got to be down more than that. But I'm looking at some of these stocks. My clients keep calling. I mean. I actually nudged into one yesterday a little bit. Why I picked that one?
Boeing. Boeing's down 60%.
Well, I the stocks, I mean, these basic industries. But I'm looking at like Cleveland Cliffs, U.S. Steel, Freeport-McMoRan, Halliburton, even Bank America. They're down to the levels where let's put it this way: if they make it, they're a buy. But I'm not so sure they make it, Fari.
Yeah. Well. I think they may try to help Boeing because it's down 60% for 1 month. Maybe it's because it's a big U.S. Exporter of high tech. And, you know, what else? Why do you have Export-Import Bank without them? That's the main client. And you know what? We've always, when I was first entered the Northrop, they always reminded me, the older folks, that this is the most mature high-tech industry we have is aviation. So we can't afford losing them. But I think the problems they had was that a lot of it came from the financial guys that came and took over the operations. This is the same problem we had at Northrop too. They came in, the finance guys basically took, and what they do is they try to finagle the earnings. And there are some emails are coming out that showing that the guy who resigned, the CEO with a $300 million package, that he had told some of the engineers, don't mess around like they did on MCAS, the dual MCAS on the KC-46, the tankers, the 767 adaptation to air tankers, came to them and said, don't mess around with this MCAS stuff. I can, the $1 million you're going to save with the dual inputs, you know, dual sensors, the outside sensors coming in to the aircraft. Don't mess around. I can finagle it with the, you know, mess around with the, on the bond side or move around some of the earnings, and I'll be there. Don't worry about it. That would come out, that, and this is a guy who was buddy of Trump about on the new contract on Air Force One. I know it's complicated, but you got to think it through. The reason I say this is not the Boeing I used to deal with. It's changed.
No,
the Boeing I used to know were run by a bunch of Stanford guys. They had done their homework. They were polite. They were demanding. They would not take a prisoner. And then one thing they were very good at, which you need to, they were in total control for their rate protection. That is, because we were going up so fast, okay, and we were trying to build all of this, it was that it would allow you to get in there and be responsible to them, because the quality to them was number one, was paramount. This is the quality control, both in management and on the line. They failed. And, you know, when this thing comes out, you're talking about criminal investigation. Those people who lost loved ones, they have major assets to go after, which is Boeing, would be Boeing's liability.
Yeah, except those people, not to be heartless, those people are from overseas. They already settled with them. And when you, if you kiss,
No. The settlements were not, the settlements were not final. The settlements were partial. No, sir. As far as I know, the settlements were, Boeing gave them some money in regards to the
But you have.
I haven't heard them settle.
But you have.
You have?
They did. They were the first one, I think, did. Maybe try to look that up. I think the Lion Air one they did. But the point is, there's limits on how much you have to pay in international waters anyway. But here's what I'm, when you lose this discipline, Fari, and, you know, if you owned, you know, Fari's Bar and Grill, and everything's going swimmingly, the world's going great, people love Fari's Bar and Grill. Again, I can't imagine you as a mixologist, but you do. And at the height of the market, you decide, I'm going to open up another one 5 miles away. We can't even get in this place. That could be a very, very good decision based on the situation right now. Maybe not, but say it is. It depends on how much you spend for a new one. There's a lot of factors, but I won't go into that. But now you go to the new one, and all of a sudden, in the middle of that, some recession hits right in the middle of construction, and you're like, holy bleep, I could have survived in the first place, but now I can't decide. None of this is your fault. You didn't cause the recession. You may have stretched yourself a little too much, but you didn't wait until you could pay for the next place cash. In other words, the airlines decided right now, I'll lead into this, to buy back $37 billion worth of stock. Now, I may not have been a horrible decision at the time, but you also look at, I believe, I don't think these guys own one friggin' plane. They lease every single one. Now, wouldn't you say that instead of buying back $3 billion worth of stock, suppose I were to be the head of United Airlines and say, you know what, if I'm going to be here 10 years, at the end of 10 years, I want to at least own 20% of our fleet. So yeah, instead of buying $3 billion worth of stock back, I'm going to say, from what I know of the pricing, that's 737s. We want to own them. So the next time there's a problem, we don't owe anybody. But at the end of the day, I mean, you never get to the point where you own them all. I get that part. But, I mean, but I mean, 20-25%, I mean, it's like Boeing. Looking back at it, the decision, the hubris decision of continuing to produce 40 or 45 737s a month when they were banned from flying was stone cold ignorant. Should have, but they might have got away with it. They're a duopoly. They're confident as hell. They're cocky as hell. Okay, they might have got away with it, but it was a horrible decision. I mean, at the time I said it, you can't do that. You have no. What are you going to do with 500 of these things on the ground or 400 of them and the thing not in the air? Now they didn't cause this virus, but every other business, if something bad happens, you didn't count on during your expansion phase. You're out of business. But these guys are, wait a minute. Well, we need $100 billion. From where? The government doesn't have it. They're going to print it, and all of a sudden you're in my currency gets debased. The few bucks we have are now worth less. I mean, this is insane. Fari, thank you very much, buddy. Good luck to you the rest of the week and until next week. S&P futures down 71.
I'm trying to cover my soup money.
Yeah, NASDAQ futures down 165. Stuff's moving all over the place. Come back, Mr. David Adelman.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures down 65. These are the June futures. NASDAQ futures down 140. Although I can't even give the number out while they're flipping 4 or 5 points at the time. Dow down 597. Over in Europe, we've got down here as well, but not horrible. DAX down 67 points, 0.8%. FTSE down 96, 1.8%. So I guess that was fairly horrible. Gekron down 33.9%. So anything under like lock limit now, we're thinking is not horrible. It's pretty awful. Nikkei down 173, 1%. Shanghai down 26, 1%. Hang Seng down 582, 2.6%. So Hang Seng's taking a brunt of it over there. Oil up 7%. $221.96 a barrel. Wow. I mean, so don't be careful on the percentages. Brent up 71 cents, 2.85%. Natural gas, 161. RBOB, 63 cents. That is really something. Bonds, U.S. are 1.13, way up from the 0.5 they dipped under last week. One minus 0.20. Japan, 0.10, 0.1% positive. Who'd have thunk that with everyone, the central banks going the other way? Gold down 560, 1472. Silver up 17 cents, 1194. Copper, 213. Which is really low. Maddie, what do you got for it? Oh, individual stocks. Everything in the Dow, industrial average is down. Notable. Boeing, 95 hours, 698. I traded under 90 yesterday. Apple down 398. We'll see Goldman Sachs begin beat up on down 457, 135. I am just real nervous about these bank stocks. Only because they're making me nervous. It's not me trying to thump. I want to go long in there, not go short, and, it's just hard for me to do that. Manny, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We're nice and quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. We do have foggy conditions, which we'll get to in a second, but not causing any accidents or stalls or delays at this hour. Smooth sailing coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Same for Lakeshore Drive in both directions. Eisenhower, Stevenson, all quiet. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. No crashes off the expressways either, so enjoy a nice quiet drive if you're heading out and about this morning. Most people are obviously staying in. Weather today, we're under a dense fog advisory until 10 a.m. this morning. That's affecting visibility. In fact, outside of our window here downtown, you can barely see the building across the street.
Maybe if you jump out the window, you won't be able to see the ground.
It's pretty foggy out there, so keep that in mind. And then we'll have showers and possible thunderstorms rolling in later on today. Mild temps, a high of 57. Right now it's foggy and overcast and 42 degrees downtown, going up to a high of 57. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of just 62 today. Right now it's overcast and 51. In sports, the Bears continue to make moves in the offseason, although we don't know how long this offseason is going to last. Could be a permanent offseason, I don't know. No sports has got my brain kind of scrambled, but the Bears acquired Nick Foles from Jacksonville in exchange for a compensatory fourth-round pick. The Bears will also assume $20.125 million of remaining guaranteed money on Foles' contract. Patriots legend and future Hall of Famer Tom Brady is rumored to be signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Nothing official yet, but all reports are indicating he will sign with them very soon at approximately $30 million per year. And that's it for sports. Chief?
What, David, how are you?
I'm fine.
Manny, what do you think the motivation there is? When the final chapter is written, what do you think the story is on the... Brady want to prove that it wasn't all just the system, that he could do it somewhere else, or
Think Brady wanted to leave. I think the Patriots didn't want him for that kind of money, that kind of commitment, and he said, "Fine, I'll go somewhere else."
Well, why didn't they do it last year when they had the other guy, or 2 years ago?
I think so. If you recall, I think Belichick did want to do it 2 years ago, but the ownership of Robert Kraft swooped in and said, "We're not trading Brady." So then Belichick, as an FU to ownership, traded Garoppolo and got much less of a return than people thought he could have got for Garoppolo. And that's the underlying rumors going on in New England, that there's been some, you know, Belichick, the reason why he's been so good is he's been cutthroat over the years, where he's gotten rid of guys, you know, 2 years early as opposed to 2 years late, like most teams do.
Yep.
And it didn't matter who you were, didn't matter past success. He was like, I'm going to get rid of you when I can get the most for you. And that's why they have that sustained level of success. But with Brady, he was such a legend and obviously still performing at such a high level that ownership said, you know, you're not getting rid of Brady. And Belichick was ready for Garoppolo to step right in, and that was a guy he drafted out of Eastern Illinois when no one else wanted him. And then ownership swooped in and said, no, you're not doing that. So he said, fine. And he traded Garoppolo, and they've stuck out Brady, won another Super Bowl with Brady. But yeah, I think Belichick's been wanting to do this for a while.
Well, they seem to have lost their Midas touch on being able to fill people in around them. I think they were kind of stunned when Gronk quit, and they don't really have the wide receivers. A couple of them got hurt.
Yep.
And Brady's to the point where they're still.
They were still one game away from going to the Super Bowl, and they still, you know, were the number two seed in the AFC last year. It's not like they were bad. They had one of the best defenses in the AFC.
Right.
But they just they couldn't stop Tennessee's running game in that playoff game, and we saw Tennessee had a good run last year.
Well, yeah, and is Tampa, does he have any chance at Tampa?
I mean, Tampa has two of the 10 best wide receivers in the game in Evans and Godwin, who are just unbelievably talented, and Brady's never had receivers that good. But I don't see, you know, the offensive line there. I don't see the running game. I don't see the defense. I don't anticipate Tampa being that great with Brady, a 43-year-old Tom Brady.
Yeah. David, crazy world here, huh? I got my list together of stocks. If they don't go out of business, I like at this price. but I got to find
about that. Mentioning banks,
yeah.
And I own very, very little. I own, with full disclosure, some J.P. Morgan. I probably have just a few shares of Citi, but, you know, nothing big. But, you know, when you say you're trying to find a reason, I mean, certainly the technicals are way blown out of whack. And beyond that, I mean, you do have, you know, higher interest rates because of the, you know, the debt that's forthcoming and a steepening yield curve. And if you just look to basics, I mean, price to book is probably the most important ratio. At least that's what the pundits say. Citicorp's price to book is 0.44. So presumably, if you liquidated all the assets, you'd get, you know, roughly 2.5 times the share price that you have now. Goldman Sachs, which I don't own any, is price to book of 0.62. So I mean, they are trading sharply below, you know, book value. And PEs, you know, forward PE on Citi 4.4. So I mean, let's say their earnings are half of what is expected. It still translates to 8.8. Pretty cheap.
If you are not the government, okay, and you can't just print dough like they are doing, where exactly, I think the dramatic change in the last 10 days in terms of money for these people is we can't even comprehend at this point.
I know you know what you're saying, but I don't.
What I'm saying is that I don't know how you can even look to next week and find out, you know, what a business is going to be worth when we're essentially shutting them down right and left. I mean, I don't know how a bank. I mean, again, I've been watching.
Well, you know what the rates are. You know that the window is there. You know that they're covering money market. You know that they're covering commercial paper. You know what estimates and their estimates and they are all over the board. But you know what estimates for second quarter GDP are. I mean, they're averaging -8%. You know, which certainly hurts banks. Then again, those same estimates are for 3.8% recovery in quarter three and 3.9% in quarter four. Absolutely does not mean that will happen. But if you look for the year, if these estimates, and I mean, you're talking 20 bank forecasts and 20 economic think tank inputs, and I know it's volatile and fluid and changing by the day, you're looking at a flat year. Say they're dead wrong and it's worse and it's down 2%. You know, I mean, Citicorp was 83, it's 36.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't own any and I have no plans to buy any today. But I mean, if you're looking for a reason, at least I'm, you know, just showing you a flashlight.
I know. Oh, I understand. Think along with me. The building that's in there, the automobile that's in there, the quote assets, right? The loans,
yeah.
the things that back the loans, the collateral. What do you think happens today if you absolutely have to sell a building or even a nice car or truck? What percentage do you get?
I have no idea, but again, I don't. With when they're talking trillions here and trillions there, and I know, you know, I heard a little bit of what you were talking about, Fari. I think it's absolutely insane as well. And who's going to buy the bonds? And you're going to just print money? And what is that forecast? So I get it, but I just don't think. I mean, it's not like a Macy's or a Bloomingdale's or a JCPenney, where if the big box, brick and mortar goes under, then so be it. We had too many to begin with. I just, based on 2008, 2009, those that exist, I believe are going to exist. And I'm not saying a branch or two, couldn't close. They're probably rented. I don't think that you're going to have to that they're going to have to sell money center banks. Might be wrong. You get references to the 30s and whatever, but, again, I'm not a fundamentalist, so I don't know. I'm a data guy, and I look at the data, and I printed out data from the CDC yesterday and from CNN today. I just, the numbers are not
but,
there.
But somebody up and down the chain, not even the government, somebody up and down the chain has got to take a look at what they have right now. And I think that the banks themselves, if they own, say, Citigroup, and I'm sure it's not this way, say Citigroup owns, 40% of the 50-60% of the property debt of, say, Macy's. I think you got to be on the phone tomorrow or today or this minute with Macy's saying, you know what? If this goes on for 60 days, don't pay your mortgage for half of that time. We'll split it with you or something. Those kinds of things have to be happening up and down the chain, because the government with their printing press is not going to solve all these problems.
No, I agree. And I agree 100%.
And we've never seen anything quite like this, but everybody has to pony up here and do, quote, their share. And because, I mean, we've never seen places, I mean, that are, if it's 2 months, we could survive that. 6 months, unless, the Tripoli tap can walk down the block and get a loan for 5% without the people having to sign over their house, they're going under. I mean, unless they got more dough than I think they got. But this is going to happen hundreds of thousands.
But you're going to see that, very, very, very soon.
Yeah.
I mean, SBA loans with, extended terms and no interest or very little interest or whatever, it's going to be well less than 5%. And I believe that that's going to be available to Tripoli Tap if they want it in less than 2 weeks.
If it is, it's the first time I've ever seen anything walk its way down to that level, David, honestly. And I'm not just being a knucklehead.
And I hate to have confidence in the legislators, because I don't tend to vote for any of them, as you know. But I think that they're scared, and they're scared, for the people. I think there's, finally, after 10 years or more, a little bit of bipartisanship to really help the people. And frankly, I do think that, a lot of it comes down to the same old thing, that they're as concerned, if not more concerned, unfortunately, for their jobs, for their reelection, than for the people.
All right, but I know you've seen it in our world, in the financial world, the idea that Joe Blow can walk in and even if it's intended by the Senate, by the representatives, and I honestly believe by the president, even if it's intended, I don't see how you walk into Citigroup or Bank of America and have all their I'm going to use the term, I won't say idiots, I'll say employees, for them to throw all those pieces of paper out and say, oh no, today, they're still going to want your personal. The whole system is set up. They can't tear the system down in 2 weeks. And you know, the bureaucratic mind never stops. They're still not going to give
up. You know, I actually have a very good friend, I mean, for decades, who's like the head. She works for U.S. Bank Corp, but she is, they do tons. They have a whole unit of, I don't know, 7,000 people, 70,000 people. I have no idea, but a huge force dedicated to SBA loans. And she, I talked to her about this, and she said they can do that. They literally can do a directive and say, okay, your structure was, you know, 2 years at, you know, 8.3% and, you know, whatever, and here's the guarantees or whatever. That directive comes down and says, you know what, it's not 8.3% anymore. We're subsidizing it, and, you know, you float loans out for 2.5%, and we'll give you 2.5%. The government's backing or whatever, and extend the terms and reduce, you know, the qualifications and collateral. I'm not going to say overnight. There's some administrative, you know, hectic thing. They can change it really, really quickly. She's in Las Vegas, and they do billions in business. And she said when the directive comes down, they act.
David, as you well know, from your lips to God's ear, buddy, I would be the absolute head of the choir cheering this in. You know, all I'm saying is it'll be the first time I ever saw it.
You know, and I don't know where the money comes from. As I said, I heard your closing thing with Fari, and that I don't know. I mean, you turn to China because, you know, they don't have any new deaths or whatever, and, you know, 80% of the workforce is back and say, hey, you know, you don't like us because of tariffs and whatever, but, you know, and you froze, you know, your purchase of 20-year bonds, but, you know, could you step out and buy a couple trillion? I don't know. I don't know where the money comes from.
I don't think any of this is remotely fiscal policy. It's all monetary policy, even though they're calling it that. It's totally financed by the printing press.
Right.
Now, what I'm saying there for people who don't listen all the time, fiscal policy means you go out and borrow the money from, well, it used to be always just some people here, but now it could be anybody overseas. You go out and borrow it, and the government spends it. And they go into deficit, but it's a legitimate deficit. It's no different than a family borrowing on a student loan for that year because you need the tuition that you intend to pay back some other time. It's deficit financing, okay? But which a lot of people, a lot of governments do. Now, that's different than this time where they're just saying Fed pours in $1 trillion and the government says, well, we're going to go $2 trillion in the hole instead of... They just made that up. Now, part of that is the money supply is going to drop some because of the way the economy is contracting on its own. So you do need to put some money in the system. But it's bothering me, David, that everything I get from the listeners seem to be real studies on even what's going on with the coronavirus is coming from overseas. Now, maybe I'm just not in the loop from here, so I'm not going to...
Well, I don't know. I printed this from the CDC, and yesterday at 3 o'clock and this morning at 7 o'clock, and they had yesterday total cases, including people who had recovered and, you know, just under investigation and deaths. They had 7,708. CNN reported today 8,700. CDC this morning had 7,038, a drop of 670. No idea why there's such a variance between them and CNN. But total deaths as of 3 o'clock yesterday from CDC, 120, and CNN 140 today, CDC 125. That amounts to 0.004% in the USA, and based on number of cases, 1.6%, which other than Switzerland and South Korea is the lowest in the world.
Well, cases they know of, but if you don't test, you don't know.
Right? No, I know.
Yeah.
Hey, that 7,000 or 8,700 might be 870,000. I don't know. And I know they're trying to get ahead of it. I know they're trying to flatten the curve. I know they're trying to not, you know, get to the peak. I get all that. But the response versus what the data is to this point, and it's not only a day today, tomorrow. It's been weeks now.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I am sorry. I just don't get it.
Well, I think it was here a lot earlier than they thought. But you know what? I think they're recovering pretty quick, David, to be honest with you. I mean, I think the people that are now calling the shots on the federal level, and I think even the Pritzkers of the world, they're not geniuses, but they are listening to people. And every day it seems to me that they get a little more intelligent on it and where they're headed.
See, I don't see that. I mean, federal, yes. I think the state and the city, I think there's going to be some further dramatic action as far as shutdowns and mandatory shutdowns. And I think the response, I mean, you have what, one death?
That's
25% of it is a couple, you know, homes for the elderly. I mean, it's way, 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 way beyond.
Well, based on a study last night that I read from Germany, the idea that you don't test somebody until they are sick, to me, seems very wrong for this disease, because people are more dangerous before they get sick, before they know they're sick. And so you got to get the testing further into the process. And the last thing you want to do is take somebody who is in the early part of the process and send them home with seven family members that don't have it. That's what we're doing. So we got to be careful with that. I mean, because this disease is different from what I'm reading. And by the time somebody actually has it full tier, they're way less contagious than they were 3 days before. So you got to get them somehow or another. We need to test people before.
Other problem is, you know, I mean, while they've detected from 9 to 99 in the state, you know, the 9-year-old or, God forbid, a billion times, the 1-year-old or 3-year-old that shows no symptoms or whatever and is sitting, you know, quarantined with their family, and the family has to go to the grocery store, you know, or the bank or this or that or the other. Now, all of a sudden, you know, a 2-year-old that looks perfectly normal, you know, has infected, you know, 20 people. I get it.
Got to help you send them home with the grandparents.
Right. I get it.
So, David, at this point, not knowing, I got my list of dogs here. I mentioned to you earlier, I got like Cleveland Cliffs. I just bought a company, for God's sake. How'd that work out? I got like U.S. Steel. I got Federal Express. I got Halliburton. I got Bank America. I got JetBlue. Ford, GE, BP, and I'm not recommending these to anybody, but I'm trying to get a group of, companies that are, if they're not going out of business, they're pretty darn low, and somewhere in the next 3-4 weeks, if we start to improve a little bit and the markets haven't come back, I'm going to try and do a little bit in a big enough group that if I lose 2 or 3 of them, I'll still be okay. But right now, even United Airlines, I mean, there's the stock's down 78 cents. It's trading $20. There is huge pushback on this. I'm not so sure they're going to get help. But now, is the help going to come with, you idiots declare bankruptcy? You screwed up. You stiff your creditors like you did how many years ago? And we'll give you some money to start up. I'm not so sure the stock survives, David. Do you, or Boeing?
Boeing, I think, can go into the 70s. It's too big of an employer to let go. I think there will be subsidies. UAL, I don't believe I own any. I did and sold it out, just said, hey, you know, this is going to be a long process. Even if they get help and survive, who's going to go on that plane for, you know, 3 months or 6 months, and did they have the cash flow? But I do think that just mail and whatever, I think the government's going to take stakes in those. It happened many, many, many years ago with Eastern Airlines before they were sold and then eventually retired. But I think that Boeing will get help. And I'm not touting these as buys. I mean, if you put a gun to my head and said, say, hey, buy a distressed one, the one that I think I would look at is Citi.
You like Citi better than Bank or the other ones?
I'm sorry. Do you like them better than JP Morgan?
What has gotten into Goldman Sachs? I mean, I don't consider something distressed and still trade $137. But talk about whack. That thing has been spanked into oblivion.
I don't know. I did own a little of that, with full disclosure. I sold that out too. Not at a great price, but certainly a lot better. $200 is better than one, you know, better than 140.
This thing was 250 on 13th of January. It's 137.
I think I sold it around 200, 204.
Well, it sounds like a great price now.
I, I, I was upset about selling it. whatever. Well, I did sell some calls along the way.
What about oil? $20. Ever coming back? Oil ever? You got 10 seconds. Oil ever coming back? It's $20 or $22.
I think Trump needs to call the Saudis and say, "Hey, lay off the production. Otherwise, it's going to be a tough time." I could actually see it going to $18.
Oh God!
I hope I'm dead wrong.
All right, David. Thank you very much. But S&P futures down 35. Nasdaq's come back. Only down 48. It was down 100 something a minute ago. So we're trying this morning. We might be up today. We'll see. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.